I never usually have these thoughts, but I was like, how did they meet? Like, why are they doing this? You know what I mean? Like, there's no, and this
we
is also
talk about how they met.
This is also a problem, like, in general films about relationships, mm-hmm. where there's like an establishing shot that just says like, here's why they're together. Now we're going to move on. And we're never going to prove that they have something together.
Yeah.
You just have to take it as a given because we told you that they're together. And I am like, no, it should be believable. Like, it should be, mm-hmm. like, it should feel like a relationship. Like, you know what I mean? And even
well, they're
if,
not even in a relationship. They don't get to that
everyone's
point.
Everyone's in
it's
a relationship. We're in a relationship. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, it doesn't matter about if they're in an official relationship. It just means, like, they are drawn together. They have some kind of bond. What's the nature of the bond? What is the thing that's drawing them together?
Yeah.
I like that there's, I don't know if you can hear this on the recording, but while I'm doing this rant about love, there's like church bells in the background
every
as if we're going
every
to
time
the,
at
as,
noon, every
as
time
every
at
day
noon.
At noon the church bells ring out over Lausitzer Platz, and this is as if we're getting
recording
married.
From Jacobin
we're recording for
the
recording
studio
from the
magazine,
city hall
by the way shout out yeah. to them and thanks.
Hi, I'm Tobias Haberkorn. You're listening to Airlift from Berlin Review. This spring, two films came out in theaters that are nothing alike, despite both being about modern relationships. The Drama, by Norwegian director Christopher Borgli, is an American romantic comedy about a couple in the week before their wedding, when one of them reveals a shocking secret. The other film, Allegro Pastel, by German director Anna Roller, is adapted from a 2020 best-selling novel by Leif Rand. It features a Berlin couple in their 30s that are in an open relationship, can't quite commit to each other, and also cannot figure out why. Today, Lauren Euler and I talk about how these two films from two cultures describe the predicament of being in love in an age of both too many options and shrinking futures. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, and I also think that like the nature of the drama is that both the relationship and the film are very narrative driven. And
yes.
like the whole point of the film is about like the narrative of one's life and how does that intertwine with the narrative of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that means it's a quite fun, engaging film to watch. And Allegro Pastel is about like a kind of like rudderless contemporary existence in which like there's no like narrative whatsoever, and so there's no stakes like either in the film or in the relationship that it's depicting, right?
Is it because the characters are sort of like afraid of making things meaningful? Part of the movie is actually based on the emails and text messages that the two characters write to each other.
Because they're in a kind of long distance
relationship, in a mid distance, let's say.
A Deutsche Bahn
mediated relationship between Frankfurt and Berlin, a line that I personally often take. And so, yeah, so Tanya has this line where she says, and I think she writes that to Jerome, I wanted our relationship to be light, beautiful, but not existential.
Well, first of all, it's like a misunderstanding. I don't want to be like nitpicky or pedantic, but what does existential mean here? Like, I wanted our relationship to be light and beautiful and like have no like no significance. what is that? How is that possible?
Maybe
what do
no
you think
consequence. Maybe no consequence. And I think what the something that the movie has been criticized for, I actually watched the movie together with my partner, and we were coincidentally there was a group of three people that we knew that went mm-hmm. with us to the theater. One of them was a Berlin Review contributor, but who wants to stay anonymous? And, and these three hated the movie so much.
I also hated the movie so much.
They
Allegro
hated
Pastel,
it so much, and one of them even had to leave the theater in the middle of it.
And
they were so terribly triggered, which I had a hard time understanding actually, because I enjoyed it and I will explain why. But they were triggered so much, I think, by the male character, who is this web designer guy in this relationship with the woman he meets in Berlin, but then at the same time starting like a side affair with a former school crush.
It's really sweet, actually. That's like
meets.
The nicest part of the movie.
And they had a huge issue with this guy who's never going to commit to anything, who's never going to express any strong feelings, and who always wants to keep his options open. And that I understood, actually, they had dated too many of those types. But I think if that is the case, then this is a huge, it's a great achievement of realism.
Yeah, but I also actually think that that's a miss. I mean, maybe you're wrong, but I think that's a complete misreading of the film, because the person who can't commit to anything is Tanya, the woman. And she is the fuck. True. She's the kind of like rudderless, like aimless person. And what she has is her career, but her books are not that interesting to me. And she's like, you know, bopping around, and she wants to text this guy in Frankfurt, but like, she doesn't seem to be particularly like concerned about whether they see each other very often or like what their relationship means. And then she starts having an affair with a guy that her friend was sleeping with as well.
Exactly.
And it's like,
so she's actually the
one. She's the bad, like, I'm not, no one's the bad, like no one does anything that's so bad, but like the idea that like the guy is the one who can't commit to anything is just wrong in this case.
It's wrong in the beginning, and she's the one who cheats on him, if cheating is the right term here. So they don't even officialize the fact that it's an open relationship. But what they do, I think, is that they like formulate their feelings and so forth in such a way that it should not overstep the liberty of the other to also have other things going on.
Yeah, and I think also, if you want to bring it back to these two films, like the way that America, if you're talking, again, we're going to do like American European, like essentializing and like stereotyping, but like the kind of stereotypical poly open relationship structure is like, you have a lot of rules and you talk about the rules and you talk about what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. That's not what they do in this film. They just kind of do whatever they feel like. Mm-hmm. And like, they kind of articulate their feelings for each other in these somewhat tedious emails and text messages.
They also do it. They also
but
do
the, it. The feelings are not like large. Like the feelings are not supposed to guide or like form the structure of the relationship. Like,
yeah.
Whereas it's my almost philosophy on relationship structures is that you should take the feelings and then decide how you want to engage in the relationship based on the feelings. And then if you interpret the film that way, you're like, well, their feelings are just not that strong. So they don't really care about hurting each other. They don't really care like about seeing each other. They just don't, you know, they just don't seem to care that much.
And I don't think that's true. I think more than anything, and that's why I wanted to bring these two films in contrast. My impression was that they actually would like to feel more. They're actually really genuinely in love. I think it's a beautiful love story. And it shows.
I think it's a beautiful love story.
And it shows in the way they write to each other.
Yes, I think that's true.
But they live under these sort of like implicit social rule or their own anxieties or whatever it is that sort of like hinders them from really engaging into an existential and in that way transformative for each other type of relationship.
Yes, and they're afraid of
and there's
love.
A moment and there's
they're
a,
afraid
they're afraid and there's a moment and yeah and in that way it's totally undramatic.
Mm-hmm.
The absolute opposite of the drama.
Yes, they don't want to get into the situation that the drama
yes
represents,
and they,
but the conflicts are about what are the conflicts
well
about?
The conflicts is, for example, about the fact that she sleeps with another guy, this party guy who actually her best friend has a crush on, so she's managing to mess up both her friendship with the best friend and her relationship with mm-hmm. Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerome is really upset about it.
Is he really upset about it?
I think
it?
So. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's just no... what is really upset?
And then Jerome makes this... It's summertime and she has this other thing with the other guy. And Jerome, the way he sort of like processes it and overcomes his disappointment with it is that he makes this really stringent summer plan of like working out, and we see him going on like
his runs,
running in the outskirts of Frankfurt with the skylight in the mm-hmm. background, like a great shot. And he also gets really serious about his web design projects. I mean, we can make fun of him like being a web designer, and
I'm not making fun of him being a web designer. Also,
but I think he has this very, very, I mean, with the means that are available to him, he is upset and disappointed. Probably he cannot get to the point of really admitting that to himself. But you really see him struggling a little bit.
Yeah, and I would say also just if you compare the film and the book, in the book he's a much more interesting character and a much more dynamic character, and he has many more charms. Mm-hmm. And Tanya, I think, is more similar in both the book and the film because she is somewhat resistant to like self-knowledge, even though she purports to engage in practices that generate self-knowledge. But she's actually kind of like, she ends up very confused about, or she feels quite bad, for example, that she has hooked up with this guy that her friend is in love with. And she's like, but why have I done that? You know, they go to Tempelhofefeld and like the friend is like rolling her eyes about Tanya's kind of like self-involved recursive like apologetics that she performs, right? So Tanya, I think, is a more interesting character.
There's a great line there. And by the way, it's a really funny movie.
It's not a really funny movie.
Oh, it is so funny.
The reason can I just correct the record before we move on? Because you were like, this woman I know almost walked out. She did walk out because she was triggered. I almost walked out because I found it so boring and tedious. And I felt like I don't like to engage in this kind of like armchair medical diagnosis talk, but I was really like, do I have ADHD? Because I cannot sit in this fucking movie chair any longer. Like, I cannot stand to watch this movie anymore. It's so boring.
And I will tell you why.
You have ADHD and you need to get on, Vyvanse. Why?
Well, we had this episode where we tried to sort of like obliquely, while talking about a sex scandal, we tried to like understand what German humor is. I think Life's Movie is really funny. And the text is very, very important. And it's basically like line after line after line.
Yes.
It's these great quotes.
Really, I thought the book
really
was funny.
Really pleasurable sentences from the movie that sort of like succeed themselves. For example, in that scene when they sit at Tempelhofefeld and the best friend character, by the way, great character. She I don't remember.
She's actually
all of them,
quite funny.
But she says, like, and Tanya gets into this like self-reflective, self-involved thing about like writing and I shouldn't have done it. And she sits there like this. And she's like, yeah, bisschen Haltung, Friedrich Hölderlin.
Yeah, okay, that's cute. It's that, a cute
like,
line.
Jokes like this
all
the time.
Yeah.
And
but
maybe
that's from the novel. Like, the novel is much funnier than the I thought, but also because I've read the novel. And basically the film has this very classic adaptation problem, which is like, it just goes through the novel, but in like cuts, like the scenes are too truncated. So in a novel, you get lots of like texture, like pleasurable lines and pleasurable scenes that kind of, they don't need to be the relative lack of narrative, which is kind of what the novel is about.
Yeah.
It's boring because you don't like the stakeslessness that is inherent to the relationship poisons the movie. Because the movie is like, you don't understand why they're together. Like, you don't understand why they're together. In the book, it's very clear why they're together, I think. But in the film, you're like,
maybe it is, the film is historicizing also an emotional mode. An affect that was a mode of the 2010s or the late 2010s or of a certain millennial generation. But I think it does like typify and capture something that is significant and that many people have been in touch with and that many people have lived. And I think that was also the reason why it was so triggering for these people. I found it just enjoyable to watch and very, very entertaining. And I think the role of art is also to a certain degree to typify and not caricature, but sort of like overstress,
highlight
a certain significant trait about the culture. And maybe the culture and social group that this movie can be applied to is a very small one.
That's fine too. I don't care about that. Yeah. I love Berlin. Yeah. I love the 2010s.
Yes. So in that way, I think Germans. It's an aesthetic success.
I guess I just, so we could like talk about this. You were about to accuse me of disliking the fact that he's a web designer, right? And I think the function of this,
also unfortunately a profession of the past.
Yes.
Now that
the function of this like career, and there's several scenes in which actually, for some reason, the whole thing turns on an issue of web design.
Yeah.
And Allegro Pastel is, I think, like the template or something, or like the project.
No,
that
he makes his birthday present to the girlfriend is a website.
Yeah, this is so, yeah. So basically,
and she sort of like looks at it, and then she needs a diplomatic and acceptable way of maybe saying that she doesn't like it.
But you actually never. You can't really tell if she doesn't like it.
This is the beginning of a conflict.
Yeah, but she does. But the thing when I say
no, she's unable to say that she doesn't.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, it's not a conflict. Then they. So okay, let's just like this is actually the important turning point of the film. So let's just like take a pause and discuss it for a second. You know, for her 30th birthday, she's recalled. She's a writer. She writes about kind of like tech involved people.
Yeah.
And he makes her strenuously over many weeks. He makes her a personal website for her book. And on her birthday, they wake up and they go into the kitchen and the laptop is open on the table. This is like one of the best scenes in the movie. The laptop's open on the table and then she looks at it and she just like is kind of inscrutable. Her reaction is inscrutable. And of course, like if you're an American person, you're like, oh my God, thank you so much. Yes. I love it. You know, like you're like, oh, it's so sweet that you did it. And he's like, no, you know, this is just a first draft. He's like, she doesn't do that though, to be clear. She just looks at it inscrutably. And then he's like, you know, if you don't like it, I can change things. This is just a first draft. We can work on it together. This is also a frame for relationships. Like, oh, I'm going to present something to you, but if you don't like it, we can work on it together. Like, you know, I want to hear your input. Da, 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 da. And she can't give any input. She just acts weird. And then he's like, oh no, the website, like I've done something terribly wrong. And then later they go to her 30th birthday dinner at what looks like Mazzanello. It might be even Mazzanello in the book.
It's her 34th.
It's her 34th?
Yes. And there's a huge number of lines in the movie also about this critical age of 34. Like once you turn 34, 35, things start to
become
repeat
real.
But with less intensity, Lifeline says. Yeah.
Sorry for my mistake. It doesn't, to the point I'm making, it doesn't matter. So the website, like, it's like basically like a superficial, like, kind of like screen-based gift.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't say anything about it. Then they have this birthday dinner at what looks like Mazzanello. And she's got all of her friends there. It's like a big thing. And Jerome at some point like says maybe to her sister, maybe to someone else, oh, you know, what I gave her was I made her a website. And there's like weird tension. And then Tanya's like, I want to go home. And he's like
completely
out of nowhere.
Completely mysterious.
Yes. She's very like, I got to go home now. And she's like, you can stay if you want to. Also.
Yeah, but hypersensitive people are like this sometimes. It struck me as realistic.
It totally strikes me as realistic. I'm not saying this is not realistic at all. I'm just saying I don't like the movie.
That's my point. I think this is a.
I don't like the realistic representation, like the
relational realism.
Yeah, I think it's totally true.
Yeah.
But I don't like the film. That's different. Okay. That's different. I like the book. I don't like the film.
Okay.
But the point I was going to make about the relationship is like she just randomly decides she's going to go.
Queen.
She's
without,
the drama.
Without doing
she's the
drama
queen without creating like a scene, but she's still being like quite dramatic.
Yeah.
But because there's no like she won't ever say like it just has this kind of superficial like this. It's like the figure of the website that he makes for her, which it seems superficial and it seems to be like just on the screen, but actually it indicates like a deep care and it indicates a deep like attempt to relate to her and to give her something. It's really sweet. It indicates, you know, some love for her. The parallel is that she has this kind of like this sensitive negative reaction, which superficially seems kind of like ridiculous or unfair or unreasonable, but actually also indicates like her feelings for him, because it's not like she hates the website. It's
the
like
end,
she doesn't want to be with him. Yeah.
And the tragic, it's actually a tragic movie in the end. They will not get.
They won't
we don't
get
know.
Together.
But let's maybe move to,
move to the more exciting
the American
movie.
Side of things. There's so many like open tabs in my mind about how to segue. And one of them is actually, you described the open laptop in the kitchen and breakfast scene.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that in drama as well, because Robert Pattinson's character is composing the marriage speech.
His marriage speech.
Yes. And part of the movie is that the couple that's going to get married are sitting together with their best friends who are going to be the bridesmaid.
The maid of honor, and then the best man is what they're called. Do you want me to summarize
best
it? Because
man.
It's my culture.
It is your culture. Go ahead.
Basically, what happens is Robert Pattinson his character's name is Charlie, but let's call him Robert Pattinson because he's just Robert Pattinson in every movie he plays. And similarly, Zendaya, whose character's name is Emma, but we'll just call her Zendaya, are in a relationship. They've been together for 2 years. They're about to get married. It's the week before their marriage, and they're trying menus at some fancy place with their two best friends.
And skin contact orange wine.
They're drinking skin contact orange wine. They're kind of drunk. And one thing leads to another, and their friends say, oh, before we got married, we did a thing where we told each other the worst thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
And they were like, let's do it all together. And Zendaya looks a little bit concerned. And then they all go around and say the worst thing they've ever done. And then Zendaya says, I almost did a mass shooting when I was 15. And everyone's like, I'm sorry, what? Yeah. That's like more worse than ours.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's a week before their wedding. Like this is a very expensive wedding. Also, like emotionally, you know, when you get married, ideally this couple is sort of established to be like a good couple who love each other and very sweet.
Draft well, they love each other, but I would say they barely know each other.
I don't even think that's true. That's why I think it's a betrayal that he didn't know this before.
That strikes me as unrealistic. Like, how would you? It's great script writing. It's great for the plot of the movie, and I enjoyed the movie very much. I think as much as the Life Runt movie kept me sort of like busy and pleased with the quality of its text and the lines.
Mm-hmm.
I was pleased by the Bogli
it's so funny.
Movie. No, because it's extremely well edited.
Yes.
The rhythm of the scenes, the way he sort of like intertwines, also flashbacks, the aesthetics of it is also, it's all very, very good.
It's a really well done movie, and I think it's a very pleasurable movie. I think it's a very funny movie. I think it is a very smart contemporary romantic comedy, of which there are not so many anymore.
It's great, yeah.
And I
all
think
I'm saying is
the
that
realism,
it rests,
though,
all I'm saying that it rests, I think, on a completely unrealistic
I think the success
premise.
Of this... No, I disagree. The success of the film is that the premise straddles, is just on the border of realistic. It is just possible to imagine that happening. And part of the discursive element of the film, which it has been criticized for, is the ability to debate whether the premise is realistic and under what conditions would it be realistic and is it valid.
That's
what
the whole interest
next
of the movie.
Well, I think that's part of the compelling part of the movie, because I think the premise of the movie, it's like a fake twist, because this twist comes quite early in the film.
Yeah.
And after the movie came out, it was very hard to avoid learning what the twist was going to be, learning that like the big secret she reveals is that she almost committed a mass shooting when she was 15 at her school. And then the thing that's funny about it is like he asks her more questions about it. And like, it's not like she realized, oh, this is actually morally wrong. She was like, well, there was another mass shooting at the mall the same day, so I didn't do it because someone had already done it that day. And then over time, she kind of realizes the error of her ways.
Yeah, and it's even worse. It's like also another reason why she doesn't do the shooting is that it's also not entirely clear why she would want to
shooting. But I think that that's what's also realistic and interesting about it.
It's more like she's into the aesthetics.
That's what she says.
Of the shooting.
But
and
this is also what we learned about.
She's recording the confessional video that's going to be her, famous moment of getting known to the world, the manifesto. And she can't record it because there's a pop-up window on her computer requesting some sort of update.
Yeah, it's funny. It's so a very funny film. And it's funny in the details. But if we're talking about the premise, which is a fake twist, right? Like, there's a fake... I love a fake twist that's at the beginning of the movie.
Well, I think it's a fake relationship. But why? I mean... This is something that would be, I think, completely unknown to the world of Allegro Pastel. I mean, no one in Allegro Pastel would ever like be anywhere near committing a violent crime.
But we know nothing about. Also know nothing about any of the people. Like, they don't know anything about each other, and they don't know anything about themselves.
Because there's not
so
that
they couldn't
much
ever...
to know about them.
Well, this is also a question about like the nature of complicated relationships.
I think in this sort of like post-therapeutic world of Allegro Pastel, if there was some like huge traumatic element about their pasts, they would talk about it.
No, they wouldn't. They barely talk at all. They wouldn't. And also like I'm really irritated.
Anyways.
No, stop. We're going to keep talking about this. We're going to work this out. Okay. To me, You have a very, in the drama, she has a very shameful secret. It's a very American secret. It is a very foreign alien secret to the kind of people that she is now around, which is Robert Pattinson, a very like posh, he's a British guy. He's a curator at a museum.
What is it, like Boston Art Museum?
Yeah, whatever, Cambridge something. Yeah. And like his friends, right? And so she, you know, she's changed her life. And so she's in this relationship. Their relationship seems pretty good, pretty close.
But she could use something we only learn in the sort of like dramatic final scene at the wedding, when the guy completely sort of like goes nuts and starts like a brawl, like they get into a fist fight with the.
Oh my God! You're adding too many elements to this conversation. You need to focus on what we're arguing.
What I want to say is that only at that moment we learn that Zendaya's character, actually, after having been tempted and almost attempted the school shooting, becomes the head figure of an anti-gun chapter in her school.
Yes.
So she completely misses the opportunity in the very beginning also to transform the story of her past into the success story and successful overcoming and becoming like an advocate for nonviolence and against guns, etc. Doesn't even bother mentioning that.
Well, that's because she's being attacked. And like, look, I also don't want to talk about these people as if they're real people. I want to talk about this film as if it's a film.
Yeah.
And what happens in the film, which I think is what makes it a good film, is that it represents what happens when there's a dramatic secret that is revealed under high-pressure circumstances, and everybody is looking for it to be somebody's fault. The high pressure of that situation means that everyone is more likely to fuck up. So Zendaya doesn't handle it very well. She keeps vomiting out of nerves. And she's really like, she's trying to atone, and she's trying to say like, look, let's talk about it. And the reason I didn't tell you is, you know, da 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 da. She's trying to be really reasonable about it. But Robert Pattinson is freaking out. And it's his right to be freaking out, because he's like, what did I miss about her? Were there signs about her that I missed that would have demonstrated her essentially violent character? Now, she doesn't have an essentially violent character, but of course, if you're already in a wedding.
He has an essentially creepy character. But.
Oh my God, you're just doing sort of woke male feminists, like she's never done anything wrong, like whatever. I think, like, if we want to talk about an actual relationship, just a sidebar, like, of course, if you're in an actual relationship, you should want to tell the person that you're in love with, like, your secrets, and, like, you should want them to know about that stuff, and you should want to hear with and, like, let them process it with you, of course, like, ideally, but that's not what the film is about. The film is about, like, a realistic situation where someone has a dark secret that they reveal under, like, highly pressurized circumstances. Also, the pressurized circumstance of planning a wedding, a very fancy, wedding.
Yeah.
And then this is already highly pressurized. And then Robert Pattinson spins out, which is also totally natural. But the fact that he's freaking out means that he's acting increasingly erratically and bizarrely. And there's a very hilarious scene that everyone at the theater I was in was laughing hysterically about, where he basically tries to talk to his coworker about his female coworker about like what's going on, but he does it in a kind of veiled hypothetical way. And she's like, that's incredibly bizarre. Like, what's going on? And then he, like, tries to have sex with her, and then he starts bursting into tears. Like, this is an example of, like, how the pressure of the situation then leads to more
drama.
Antics and drama. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't – there's, like, no de-escalation that's possible. And that's why the film is so enjoyable, and that's why it's called the drama, because it's, like, a high-intensity, high-pressure situation. That kind of comes out of nowhere, but then – the thing about it is, like, he's then goes back and thinks about, like, scenes from their relationship, which are all represented very funnily and of great editing. And, like, it's, like, really hilarious. And there's, like, lots of things where she's, like, has road rage a little bit. And he's, like, oh, she's actually really violent. There's a scene where they're having sex and she just kind of randomly slaps him. And then he's, like, why did you do that? And now he's, like, she's a violent person. It's like a caricature, or it's like a heightened version of what really happens in a relationship, which is like when you learn something about someone's past and you love them and you have an idea of them, and then your idea of them is forced to like integrate this new knowledge, even if it's just like a cute little story about someone from when they're 8 years old. You're like, oh, now my understanding of them has to integrate this like new information. And I think they even say this in the film, like, he says, like, why didn't you tell me, like, earlier? Like, I would have been more understanding. But now, like, I have to, like, work this out in the 4 days before our wedding. And then the figure of the wedding speech, which he keeps editing and re-editing and re-editing, is a really good example of the principle of, like, integration that I'm discussing, which is, like, he's trying to summarize something that is, like, you can't summarize it, right? Like, it's a very complicated person. Like, my relationship to them is complicated. And he would prefer it if it was just simple and he could make fun of her laugh. He's like, he asked his friend, like, should I talk about our sex life? And he's like, bro, no, don't talk about your sex life. That's so weird. But he's like, but I love our sex life. You know what I mean? Like, he wants it to just be an easy thing that you can just summarize in a cute little wedding speech. But then actually the secret comes in, and then it makes it a realistic relationship between, like, complicated adults. But yes, it is a heightened or highlighted version of this. But I think why it's so successful is it is just on the border of realism. And you are like, I could actually imagine that happening. And I actually do think it's realistic the way that it plays out, even if it is sort of antic and, like, absurd as well. When I say realistic, I think it is possible. It could happen.
I want to understand why the terms and premises of a relationship that are displayed in the drama are so different from the ones in the Labour of
Pastel,
for example.
Yes, this is very interesting.
A lot has to do with the expectations and norms about expressing drama and emotions. And another thing is the sort of, like, cultural default of how you deal with secrets and secrecy. And this might be just a very silly and tiny aspect of the movie, but both movies start with the man hitting on the woman. In both movies, it revolves around a book that the guys haven't read. Pattinson sees Zendaya sitting in a cafe reading a book, and then he starts talking to her about that book and pretends that it's such a great book.
Because he looks it up right before
he looks it up on Goodreads, and he says how much he loves the book and blah blah blah. And then later, yeah, but how silly is that? I mean, and then
it's
later,
silly, but that's what people do. And it's then, cute.
You got to be so silly as a guy to pretend, and then he doubles down on it.
Let me make my point.
The way that Jerome and Tanya meet each other is that Jerome goes to a reading of Tanya. Tanya is this writer in the movie, and then walks up to her, has the book signed, and says, oh, your book sounds great. It's been recommended to me so many times that I almost don't want to read it. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
And still he gets a signature.
Yeah.
So he also hasn't read her book, but he's open about it.
Who cares? That's not important. Like, it's not important. Also, Robert Pattinson confesses. I mean, this is like a little microcosm of the whole plot of the movie. They go on their first date, and she's like, so what's your favorite part of the book? And
yeah, he confesses, like, after a couple of glasses of wine very end, when he can't, like, hold his plot together anymore because it becomes apparent that he hasn't read it.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But what I'm saying is that it's a different way of sort of, like, pretending and hiding a secret or being super open and sort of, like, post dramatic about it as in the other movie.
I will say, one of my most purest, nicest relationships in my life, when I was 20 until I was 23, and we're still very good friends, began with the guy just blatantly lying to me about, like, basically his entire life. And, like, basically, I was in Berlin visiting for the first time when I was 20 years old, and I went on one of these horrible tourist pub crawls. And, like, the pub crawl tour guide was, like, really cute, charming British guy, just like Robert Pattinson. And we started flirting, and I started talking to him about poetry because I was studying English literature, and he knew all this stuff about English literature. And he was like, yeah, I went to Oxford, I did this and this and this. And then we had this wonderful night together, just talk about literature all night. And then, you know, I left Berlin and we emailed a bunch, and then I looked him up on the internet and I was like, this says that you went to some other university and you studied something else, and, like, it seems like you kind of lied to me about all this stuff. And he was like, I know, I'm sorry. It's because on the pub crawl we always lie. So I'm very sympathetic to, like, you know, you're putting the moves on someone and then you're like, oh, I didn't know. I thought it was just going to be a little fling, but then now it got real.
Would you have married him?
I know. Would I have married him, like, when I met him when I was 20? No, we're not married.
You would have found out in the process of preparing the marriage.
No, he confessed. I'm just saying he confessed. It's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's not even like Zendaya has done something wrong by not confessing earlier. What's interesting is that it doesn't seem like it bothered her until it came up that he didn't know this. Because when I have things that like I'm in love with someone and like I want them to know like everything about me and I want them to want to know and to care about these things and I feel the same way about them, like I want to know like what's gone on in your life and why are you like this and like how do you feel about it. So like to me the more interesting question is like, and I think this is also realistic, I think a lot of couples don't feel that way. I think a lot of couples are like, I don't really care. I don't want to tell you about myself. Like I want to have some relationship that's based on something else. For me, that's not what a relationship is. So I think it's more I think it's totally reasonable and possible that some kind of secret like this would just like come out accidentally, because I think it's not a given that people think of talking about their lives in like an almost like a very deep way as part of, as a necessary part of a relationship. And I think like most people don't have secrets like that. Like most people, like nothing, they've done nothing interesting. They've done nothing complicated. Like like most people are like kind of boring. So maybe they don't talk about their lives because there's not that much to say.
I think what's interesting in the drama is that the deep trauma of the past.
It's not even about that.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And then that's what I like about it.
It's sort of like she almost accidentally gets into the aesthetics of the school shooting, and then also seems to be getting out of this phase of her childhood or adolescence quite well.
Yeah.
By becoming this advocate for like this anti-gun movement. And it's funny because in the scene where she flips and sort of like stops wanting to scheme for a shooting and becoming an advocate for anti-gun violence, there's a group of students sitting around, and there's some guy she probably finds a bit charming who says, oh, I think you have the best face for it. You should be our advocate. You should be our leader. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly she has the sort of like the confirmation of the group that she's valid and that she's good enough. And that's sort of like giving her the confirmation she needed. And she's in the center of the attention for changing the side.
Yeah, I think it's funny. And it's also like it's subverting these like trauma narratives, which like some of the reviewers, my least favorite reviewer of all time, Richard Brody, for example, is complaining about how, you know, Zendaya always has to be a receptacle for male directors, like visions of trauma. And I'm like, she isn't traumatized by this at all. Like she's actually like saying, I'm not.
Yeah, it's as if the film can afford not making the obvious points about this political tangent and having this sort of like as a random element in it.
Yeah, because it knows what you think about school shootings. It knows what you think about trauma. It knows what you think actually, like the reason why the premise, the sort of weighty premise works so well is because it comes quite early, the twist, it's not even really a twist, comes quite early. And then the film is actually about like the fallout from it, not about the secret itself.
Yeah.
It's about what does the secret do to people, and it basically makes them insane. There's lots of really good puns. There's lots of really good jokes. Like it's really like, you know, there's this kind of antic. It's like a like romantic comedy like version of like Festen by Vinterberg or you know, some of these other movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually the thing about the movie, the reason why it's also compelling is that you want to know, are they going to end up together? And it's also it's a subversion of like the regular romantic comedy where you're like, I really want this couple to get together. That's like a classic romantic comedy plot.
But they do
end up together. They do end up together. But the plot is nice because you're like, are they going to break up? And I don't even know if they should break up, because it's such a fast-paced movie. You don't have time to kind of process about, like, what do you think? Should they break up or not? Like, you're kind of in it, like, with them. And this is also why I think it's a very successful twist on the genre.
Yeah.
When you told me that you wanted to do an episode about these two films together, I really liked the pairing because they are kind of mirror images in some strange, like bizarro way. But I'm wondering like if we can even extract any generalizations about the meaning of relationships today from comparing them, or if that's even productive.
Yeah.
You know, like why did you want to pair them?
Why did I want to pair them?
Yeah.
Both movies are sort of like antithetical in so many interesting ways, whether it's about marriage, commitment, and engaging. It's about how you deal with secrets. The secrets have to be open by default in the Life Hunt movie, whereas the secret is should have been kept forever, probably, like according to...
No,
to,
I think the secret should have been...
No, they could. Had they not had the sit-down over the skin contact orange wine, she would never have revealed it, and it might, you know, have come out at a later point of the marriage. So in that way, these two movies come from two very, very, very different worlds of how you process relationships. And I actually wonder, I mean, I think drama also is, in terms of like the cinematic quality, a better movie. It's clearly like a bigger production, etc.
Yeah.
And it is already a box office success. It's going to be a movie that's watched almost all over the world, which is not going to be the case of Allegro Pastel, probably. Mm-hmm. But do you think that Allegro Pastel can travel internationally and can, I don't know, people who have not lived in Europe, live in Berlin?
No, I mean, I think...
Will it even understand?
No, because I don't think it rises to the level of European art house film either. Like, mm-hmm. in terms of like aesthetically, formally, I don't think it's that interesting of a film. I think both films demonstrate the limits of those
codes.
Like approaches and codes for love, right? And do so in ways that reflect those limits very clearly, right? Like the drama, it's like you know, like the pressure of the marriage plot. And the pressure of the marriage, like, institution creates, like, all the problems, actually.
Yeah.
Or you could argue that. And then in Allegro Pastel, like, the complete lack of structure and the complete, like, you know, what you might call freedom of their lives also creates all the problems.
Yeah. Okay. If we... wanted to expand our watch list and... watch some more movies that can relate to these two. What would we recommend?
The obvious film to watch in conversation that the drama is kind of in conversation with is Festen by Thomas Vinterberg, Dogma 95 director.
Mm.
Is it
about a marriage?
It's not about a marriage. No. I think it's about a celebration, like
a milestone, a patriarchal birthday thing.
Yeah. And it's much darker and but it's like one of the great movies.
You know, it's
yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
And definitely an influence on this in
on Christopher Borley, who also is Scandinavian. We have not discussed this.
We're talking about Scandinavian.
We'll get back to it.
Yeah, whatever.
He's Norwegian. Yeah.
He's Norwegian. Vinterberg Danish. But you
so that is your recommendation.
That's my recommendation.
I will go for a German movie. That is from 2009, Maren Ade's Alle Anderen.
I love it. Starring, it's so good.
Starring a great and young Lars Eidinger and Birgit Minichmayr, who have a real dramatic conversational breakdown of their relationship while hiking in Sardinia.
It's such a good movie. It's really great.
Don't tell me Germans can't do drama.
I never said that. I think you guys are incredibly dramatic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just...
So Life Hunt is the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
I think so.
Thanks, Lauren. And see you soon again.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. I have one more recommendation for you. This week in Berlin Review, the writer Jana Antonissen has an essay about calling off her own wedding and what it was like to then watch the drama. You can read her essay, which is called My Very Personal Drama, at blnreview.de. There you can also find our full archive of essays, criticism, and airlift episodes. Subscriptions start at just 5 euros a month. And you've probably heard this one before, but please subscribe to Airlift. Give us a like and positive review. It actually does help. This episode was edited by Caitlin Roberts with Najla Saint. We'll be back with another episode soon. Until then, I'm Tobias Haberkorn, editor of Berlin Review. See you next time.